one podcast, mining the Magic the Gathering community for salt. This is the Howling Salt Mine.
It's the Howling Salt Mine. The Howling Salt Mine.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Howling Salt Mine podcast. The podcast where we delve into those salty, salty minds of the Magic the Gathering community, find the saltiest stories, the saltiest posts, put them in our mind cart, and bring them right back up to you, our dear prospectors at home. As always, I'm your host, Sam, and I'm joined today by my singular co-host, Mike. Say hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. and we are also joined by our...
You're allowed to skip it.
No,
for guests.
You made me.
There's a guest for the flow.
The fact that like Mike had a moment where he realized that Sam was talking about him and there was like that like 1 to 2 second delay. Like, oh shit, that's me.
Oh yeah, I saw you were just like, huh? Like the gear just was spinning and then the teeth cut.
The WD-40 finally kicked in and loosened up about there.
The podcast lube finally hit.
Oh boy,
that's not good. Okay.
Not filling right in for Tony.
We'll cut that. Someone's got to do it.
No, we will not cut that. But you've already heard his voice. Of course, we are joined by our honored guest host, Nick. Say hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick, indeed. What up? Well, before we go any further into the mine, we have to shout out our nice patrons, because they are nice. And this week we have Alex Balix, Cream Bean, Hephaestus Bolts, Prime Speaker Florian, Yafe Judge, Dr. Black, Accidental TPK, and Royal Flood. Thanks for being so nice, guys.
Nice.
I love
nice.
You. I love you. I love you all.
Well, a hug?
No? Are you okay. Love bombing now?
Group hug?
Yeah. Group hug? No? Okay.
Should we hug?
No? Should we hug?
Okay.
No? Okay.
Oh, man. Tony is not with us this week because
he's dead.
Is finishing off that musical. Do you guys remember when he said he was never going to do musicals again?
Yeah.
He lied.
I know, he's fucking lying.
He was like, but I won't have to miss much.
He's like, it won't impact Thursdays except for 2 Thursdays in a row. Yeah.
That bastard.
Yeah. But it's okay. He's having fun though.
Yeah, people will find out in a stray grants that maybe that's not true.
You know, it's become a trope, right, of like Tony does a musical to try and have fun and then all he does is complain about it after the fact.
But it's something to do, you know,
it's something to
he's
do
keeping himself
he is
busy.
Doing something, you gotta respect that.
He's doing something, man. Yeah.
I played some games with a different pot of people.
Wow.
Earlier this week.
Unforgivable.
I know. This is my moment of confession. Sam actually knows already because
I
had
do
told,
know this.
I
and
had
you
told
literally
Sam
were
that
cheating
I was going
on
to play with him. And then I was at someone else's house and I got his text of like, what the fuck, dude?
Mike just wants an open pod.
All right.
A polypod.
A polypod.
Yeah. So this is really funny because a couple weeks ago, Mike and I were like, are we going to play CDH tonight? Like, maybe not. And, you know, I was busy with shit, so I was like, let's just skip it. And he was like, but next week we're definitely playing, right? And I was like, hell yeah, dude. So then, you know, I have like a big group chat with a bunch of friends in the Magic world. And we're just like chit-chatting. And my friend Eric is like, hey, Sam, Mike's coming over to play CDH tonight. How do I kick the shit out of his Sisse deck? And I was like, what the fuck, man? So I text Mike and I'm like, seems like you were a liar, dude. Seems like you underestimated how much Eric and I text back and forth. And he was like, shit, caught red-handed.
Well, really, I just overestimated your ability to not flake on playing. I knew I needed to get some games in before this tournament that we're going into. And I was like, Sam will probably be busy again.
Yeah.
But that's just me covering my ass and pretending that I had an excuse. I totally skipped out.
The truth is, I probably would have flaked.
Yeah,
so I think you need
the other part, though.
Like, I finished cooking dinner at like 8 that night. I did this very elaborate, like, broiled fish with like latticed potatoes and stuff like that. And then it was, you know, I did a big fish meal. So it was a ton of cleanup afterwards and stuff.
Yeah, a big fish meal.
And by the time it was like 8:30 or 9, I was like, well, Mike probably made the right choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was, it was really interesting. Like I, you know, I've played in R pod a lot. So like a very fixed set pod. I've played in conventions, which is like very unknown people, like somewhat trusted people if they're like patrons or something. And then also playing with patrons, which is definitely like a trusted environment, which is fun.
I don't trust any of those assholes. Yeah, you kidding exactly. me, dude? It was so shady.
It was very interesting to be a guest in somebody else's like established play group. Like the three of them had played a lot of games together.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. It was interesting to see like just a different environment like that where people are all playing together.
Were you able to like fly under the radar because of existing play group dynamics?
I don't think I like was taking advantage of any like grudges between people or anything. Like, I don't think there was like Tony and Nick or Tony and Sam or Tony and Tony. Tony. Like none of those.
Tony and Tony. None of Tony those grudges basically were in place. Literally anybody he's ever played against ever.
Damn you, Tony. You ruined Tony. I definitely think I got to fly under the radar just having like not played a ton of Sisse games against them an infinite amount of times. So.
You did pub stomp.
I don't think I pub stomped. The games, to be fair, were all very, very even, but I did happen to roll first two games, so that helped a lot.
Did you bring your own dice?
Yeah. And was I wouldn't let anyone pair? Else use them or hold them. So, but they're fair. They are fair.
Yeah, they're very even because every side is a six, so it's very fair.
Yeah, you do
that thing where you roll and then you see it and you scoop it up really fast and you're like, it was a nat 20.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys saw that, right? Or like I just roll it like off so it falls slightly off the table.
Pick it up off the floor.
And then I grab it and I'm like, you guys, that's cool, right? It was the 20.
Dude, I played D&D in high school with a guy that did that.
Really?
Often. He like quick aside, sorry, James, I'm fucking blowing up your spot, man.
You, James.
But we would play D&D, you know, high school D&D. The stakes are low. And he had this green D20. That didn't have ink in the numbers, or like the ink in the numbers was just like another shade of green. So it's impossible to read from like across the table. And he would roll it and kind of like cup his hand and like roll it behind his hand a little bit and look at it and then snatch it up really quick as he said what the result was. So you just could not check what he was doing. And of course, he wasn't smart about it. He was giving himself way too many nat 20s. And one time I saw him roll and I saw that it was a 2 because we were suspicious. So I sat near him and he was like, it was a nat 20. And I was like, that is a 2, dude. And it was just like, it caused a bunch of issues and we stopped playing and it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Cheaters, man. What are we cheating in D&D now?
Yeah. So I used my cheating dice and then I cheated and then I won there a couple of the games. So it was
good. You know, you got to do what you got to do, right?
It was funny because Eric was like, man, Sisse is such fucking bullshit.
Did you get a post report?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, that's
how
great.
Did Mike behave today?
It's funny because you texted me the next day because I was like, well, you have to win all the games if we're not playing tonight. Yeah. And you texted me the next day and you were like, I won 2 out of 3. And I was like, so I heard. Because I had already gotten the full game report like right after you left.
Nice.
It's like, this deck's fucking bullshit. And I even told him how to stop the deck. I was like,
yeah. And he was ready. The one game where he had a dark writ with an oppo up, and I would have totally gone for it, but Kennen won the turn before me. Someone won with Kennen. So it was that one wasn't good. But I also dropped a turn one deafening silence on people.
Oof. He also and then, said that. He was like, deafening silence fucking sucks.
Yeah.
He's like, I need something in my deck like to blow up deafening silence.
Yeah, people did not like that. Eric in particular did not like the turn one deafening silence because he was on mono black Nashi, which is pretty cool but doesn't do well into a deafening silence.
Fringy,
trying to
be super turbo in these mid-range days that we're living in.
Exactly. So that's what's going on. That's new, I guess.
That's fun, man. I like it.
Well, should we get into the the mines? I don't have a good transition, so I'll just ask. I want salt.
You almost had a good transition.
But Sam, what's salt?
Oh,
Babe Boo, what's in that picnic basket?
Wow.
Ooh, what a, this is a
That's a
fun
good
take.
Tony impression, dude. That's like pretty fucking spot on. Is Tony in the room with us right now?
I hope not.
Well, thanks, Nick. I appreciate you asking. Salt is frustration in the game, as we like to say. It's an umbrella term that really encapsulates anything that's going to make you frustrated in a game of Magic the Gathering. From the small grains of salt, which might be somebody having a weird vibe. Maybe you want to be talkative and laid back in a game, and somebody is just being a little bit sweaty. They don't really want to talk. They don't really want to make deals. And it's kind of ruining the energy of the game. Maybe somebody doesn't have a great grasp on the rules. And then as those grains of salt get bigger, there's more grains. The shaker gets fuller. Keep going, Sam. The
This
metaphor
metaphor
is
is
failing. Yeah, the
gone. crust gets thicker.
Yeah, as that crust thickens, that salty crust.
A dummy thick crust.
That's a full shaker or dummy thick crust. You decide. An example of a dummy thick crust might be somebody like throwing cards, yelling, threatening violence, just being a general asshole, getting kicked out of the store. That stuff unfortunately does happen. And we're here to talk about all the different types of salt, from the little grains to those full shakers, so that we can learn about salt and hopefully not be salty in a future game. We'll see.
Nice.
We're trying. We're trying every week, folks.
Doing our best.
All we can do.
I'm not really doing my best, but I'm trying a little bit.
You're
You
here.
got to take
Showing up is
breaks.
half of it, right? That's
Yeah. You
Tony
gotta
didn't even
take
show up,
breaks.
so
You gotta
Tony
take
didn't
breaks
even
from not
show.
being salty every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's just
Yeah.
like.
It's hard. It's hard work out here, staying properly hydrated.
Those are usually the moments when you guys are like, oh, Sam is salty. And then I'm like, all right, you want to see me be salty then? I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Your deck is bullshit. That doesn't happen as much anymore because we don't track games.
Is that the reason? Is that the
I don't
reason
think
why?
that's the reason so much.
That's the
Well, that
reason.
used to happen a lot at the end of our track games. We'd be like, who's the salty player? And you guys would be like, it was Sam. And I was like, I don't think I was that salty. And you're like, nah, it is definitely Sam being salty. And I'm like, well, if I'm already the saltiest player of the game, I might as well really lean in on how much I fucking hate
Yeah,
this
but that
deck.
salt always happened after the game, so it's fine. The game actions were done.
But I can summon it up whenever I want, man. It's always there. That's my secret cap. I'm always salty.
He's a salt conjurer.
All right, let's get into it, guys. You want to hear our
Let's
first
do
story
it.
here?
I
Let's
do.
do it. So this first one comes to us from Patreon. This one comes to us from our buddy Teb. Thanks, Teb. And this post is titled Confessional Hex. And it goes, this story dates back a couple years when my friend group and me sat down to play a casual, fun game of Commander at the LGS. I don't remember the decks or the commander specifically, but at some point in the game, one of the players' board had become very scary, with some key creatures that synergized well and made them a ton of value. My board was empty with six lands, and one of the other players, we'll call her H, we could do better than that, right?
Yeah.
H. Helen Mirren.
What?
Helen Mirren. Yeah, that's a good one. Helen
Awesome.
Mirren.
You
Is that?
don't know who Helen Mirren is?
No, I don't know who some people are. Can we just accept
Just accept it and move on.
You also do not know who some people are.
I mean,
This is just the case.
What a just,
that's a good take.
just a specific general statement of I don't know who
Yeah,
some people are. Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah, there's
yes.
8.5 billion people in the world. I don't know some of them.
I'm just not going to remember all their names. There's
I
too
cannot
many.
dispute it. Yeah, that's very true. Helen Mirren is an actress.
Great.
I think
Cool.
she's got a couple Oscars, maybe one.
I think so, yeah.
So we'll call her Helen Mirren, and she had a spectral searchlight in play and a few other creatures. She asked if anyone had removal for the scary player's board, to which I replied that I do, but I would need the mana from her searchlight. Pause.
Let's read the card.
I need to understand this before we move on.
I'm assuming it's one of the like friend cards from Battle Bond, maybe?
No, it can tap to give any player a mana.
So,
Interesting.
Spectral Searchlight is a three cost artifact. It's a mana rock. Tap, choose a player. That player adds one mana of any color they choose to their mana pool. It's pretty cool. It's an interesting effect.
Battle Bond.
Yeah, it's Ravnica originally. Super old Ravnica, Ravnica City of Guilds. That's interesting because
How would that work with Kinnan? Would you get the mana if you gave it
you
to someone
would.
else?
Yeah, you would get a mana.
Because you're tapping a permanent. But are you tapping it for mana? Because you don't receive mana from it.
But it's a mana ability.
Anyway,
I truly
rules,
don't know.
Rules shower thought for you.
Yeah.
Carrying on.
Leave a 5-star review with an answer to that question. Yeah. If you know. Let's see. She agreed in the condition that I would not target anything she controls in my next turn and play a removal that would help us deal with the scary player. The deal was made, and I, being the cheeky imp that I am, used my 6 lands and her Searchlight mana to cast Necrotic Hex. Necrotic Hex costs 7. Each player sacrifices 6 creatures, and you create 6 tapped 2/2 zombie creature tokens. Pretty hot. I dig that. Her saltiness was visible, and she claimed I didn't stand in the spirit of the deal, only in the literal part of it. She didn't make any deals with me for a while afterwards, obviously, and we pretty much laughed it off, but this story remains fresh in my mind, and the main reason Necrotic Hex is one of my favorite cards. I'm sorry it's not that short, sweet, and to the salt, but I believe you know how to cut this into something readable. It was actually very short and readable.
If it wasn't for us trying to like go down various paths of digression, it would have been fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the secret. Some of these actually are short and sweet, but we just end up taking way too long to read them.
Well, this one is truly short. Yeah, like sometimes we get, I got one the other day. I was like a fucking college essay, dude. Thanks again for making the show, and I hope this amazing podcast will continue to prosper. From your fan and binge listener, Teb. Well, thanks, Teb. We really appreciate that.
Love the little imp's mischief going on there.
Yeah, yeah. How mischievous. Yeah. This is a great one. Everything described in this is like, yes, like this is exactly how it's going to go. You are allowed to really get rules lawyery and be like, well, yeah, I said I was gonna do it. You're allowed to get a little cheeky.
It's not even rules lawyer, it's contract, like legit lawyer.
Yeah,
like
you're lawyering,
adhering specifically to the terms of the contract.
Like, yeah. I mean, if you say to not target anything that they control, I mean, that it's just so specific.
The targeting,
you know what I mean?
Is specific. And this targeting starts to actually have a spirit. So you can get like really close to something almost being described by the deal and then skirt around it. And kind of the closer you are, almost the saltier it is sometimes.
Yeah.
And I will say you're allowed to do it, but exactly how this story says, like they didn't make deals with me for a while after. And like, that's just how that's going to go.
Yeah.
Like,
then's the breaks, right? Yeah. This is a, you know, I think Helen Mirren learned a very important lesson this day. I'm really curious who proposed the targeting clause as part of the contract. Cause I could see like our Helen Mirren being like, yeah, you just can't target me next turn or any of my stuff. And, you know, Op being like, yeah, okay.
Was that in the initial terms of the deal, or was it just like,
no, that's exactly what she said.
It does,
she agreed in the condition that I would not target anything she controls in my next turn, which is very interesting because like, if you think about the type of spells that are going to deal with a problematic player's board, generally speaking, you're not going to be targeting anything that another player has. You know, most board wipes do not target. Like that's kind of the beauty of board wipes is they don't target.
Right.
You know, I mean, pretty much any board wipe could be cast and be true to this deal.
Without knowing the spells, though, or the colors, because I don't think they don't remember what commanders they're playing, but there's things like Decimate, right, that can do a lot of damage to one person's board that have multiple targets that are pretty high costed.
That's true.
One thing that is kind of a fun way of evaluating deals sometimes is if you think of like, if that deal was printed on a card, what would the card say? And if you were casting this spell that said, target player can't target you during their next turn, that is a very specific spell. And like, you know, if you saw someone play a card that said that, you would think of all of the ways to circumvent that effect, you know?
Yeah.
So you just want to be a little thoughtful about thinking about the deals like that. Whereas some people really think that deals that they're offering are more like spirit deals that have these spirit to them. And you have to be more particular than that.
Mike, are you invoking the spirit of the format?
Yeah. I'm invoking the art of the deal, the spirit of the deal.
The art of the deal.
No, don't invoke that.
No.
Oh, backpedal. I think something that you can do when you're making a deal as well is if you don't want to be like really crazy lawyery with like, you know, all the fine print texts and stuff, be like, don't target anything on my board and abide by the spirit of this deal, which means don't fuck with any of my stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
In fact, don't fuck with me is actually a better deal. Yeah. Than don't target any of my stuff.
Don't fuck with me or any of my things on my board.
Don't talk to me or my kids ever again.
Don't talk to me or my son ever again. But like, you could even just say, and don't try to loophole it. Like, you can say that make your deal ironclad if you want. And they might be like, but I need to loophole it. Then I'm not going to make the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. But sometimes someone will see that and be like, okay, yeah, what I have truly does just screw that person over. And I do just need the one mana. So yeah, like,
or even ask that, for clarification on what action they're going to take. And like, have them be explicit. Be like, hey, I'm going to cast this spell to deal with that. And then... you know, like there's nothing preventing them from lying or anything like that, but like I feel like it'd be better part of the conversation.
In CDH, sometimes people will say, show me your hand
or the card.
And if you can't show me the card, then I'm not going to make the deal. And that doesn't come up that much in casual just because it's laid back, but like you could do something like that. You know, it's legal to reveal cards from your hand whenever you want.
Yep.
I do want to just like point out how interesting the Spectral Searchlight is. And it reminds me of another card that I really love, which is Victory Chimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 3-mana artifact. You untap it during each other player's untap step, and then you can tap it and a player of your choice adds a colorless mana.
That's why I was thinking Battle Bond, because that one is from Battle Bond.
Yeah, that one is from Battle Bond. And those effects are interesting because I'm not huge into 3-cost mana rocks. I think in general, the EDH world is a little bit suspicious of them because lots of times they are just worse than the many cheap 2-mana rocks that we have. But something like this that could be used politically is very, very interesting to me because it kind of opens up these deals that otherwise aren't there. Because it's a very specific thing to provide somebody with an additional mana on their turn, you know? And that's something that, like, you can't really run into that deal under normal circumstances unless you have this type of card in your list. And Victory Chimes, specifically, when it's untapping on each player's untap step, that has some other pretty cool applications. Like, I used to run that in my Gave list.
Right. It can also just be 1 mana for you every turn.
Yeah. Just to, like, get slow value.
I think that touches on a good point. Like, if you're going to run this kind of effect that can give another player a mana and you're going to be up for offering deals with it, you should be aware of some of the repercussions of what it can potentially do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. Right. Because that does make me wonder why Helen Mirren was running that spell in the first place. The Spectral Searchlight is such a weird card. It's not. I don't know any decks that really sees play.
Yeah.
So it's a choice, right? There, at some point, maybe it was in a pre-con or something. I don't know. But like, why have that in your deck? If you're going to be able to dish out mana, then like, yeah, you should kind of know how to make deals such that the mana is always going to be working in your favor and not just used against you.
Yeah, that's definitely a weird one compared to like Victory Chimes, because you do need to not use it on your turn. Yeah. And hold it up to have that political ability, whereas Victory Chimes, you can just be as greedy as you want on your turn and then just keep things going.
It's like a weird form of interaction, kind of.
Yeah, it is. It is a weird form of interaction. I kind of dig it, though.
Well, what do we think the overall salt ratings are on this one?
The fact that it's like lingered with this person, I think, is telling. Yeah. And it like doesn't remember any of the other details of the game except for this one interaction. I think that's pretty interesting. Maybe not like super high on the salt list, because it sounds like they were able to just kind of laugh it off overall. But the fact that it, you know, the outcome of this deal affected future deals for some, you know, kind of unspecified time period, or like a couple of weeks or whatever it was. But like, clearly there was some salt there, right? Like, there's enough for it to carry over into the future games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a classic salt packet.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You go to a diner and you go to the same diner every week, and they lay a little salt packet on your table or whatever, and you know exactly what to expect. It's the same amount of salt. The packet looks the exact same. This is the salt that happens when somebody gets offered a deal and they loophole the deal. It's like a tale as old as time in Magic. I still love these stories, but it's a tale as old as time. Every group has encountered this at some point or another, and it is just a classic, classic salt.
And there's various degrees to which it can happen too. And this one was pretty bad, but it also, like, you did truly accomplish the thing of screwing the other person over. So, like, you know, I couldn't agree more with Sam, where it's like, this is a classic amount. I think this is the kind of thing where your playgroup suffers in that moment where it's kind of uncomfortable that this thing just happened, but also kind of benefits from it in the long run, honestly.
Yeah, this is some late night salty fries during your first year of law school. You learned a lesson.
Experience relatable to everybody.
Yes. You know, you remember your first year of law school.
I remember my first year of law school, certainly.
Oh, man. Good shit. Also, I think the fact that they can't remember, like, who even won the game is very telling. Like, who even knows what happened after?
Doesn't know what deck they were playing. Doesn't know the decks they were playing against. Just remembers six lands very specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Do you guys want to move on to another salty story here?
Let's do another story.
Go for it.
Let's fucking do it. So our next one comes to us by way of our Gmail, thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com. You can submit your own salty stories there. And this one comes to us from our friend Bennett. And the post is titled, "Oh, in that case."
Mm-mm. I don't like take backs. I'm throwing that out there now because this feels like a take back post.
Oh, in that case. Oh, no.
All right. And the story goes, this is a long one. Teb, take note. This is what a long, salty story is like, which has actually become the average, honestly. Longtime listener, first time caller from your salty neighbor to the north in Canada. I have been listening to your podcast since the first Reddit post you guys put up and have been hooked ever since. Damn, a day one.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Show us the receipt.
Honestly, I think the fact that they say the Reddit post,
that is true. We did
receipt,
do that on the first day. Yeah.
Only like 17 people looked at that Reddit post. And one of them shit on us a lot. So
we're just three unfunny guys.
Maybe it's them.
That would be funny, dude. Now to the salt. This week, I was at my LGS with a pod of three other players I had never played with before. An Aragon the Uniter good stuff pile to my left, an Animar Soul of the Elements big creature deck diagonal to me, and a Gearson Starn burn deck across from me, while I was playing Rocco Street Chef, trying to do food and artifact things. The game progressed as normal, with Gearson pinging our stuff and our life totals down. Aragorn was politicking removal away from himself as he was dropping Atali's and gaining value, doing his own thing, but never really running away with it. Animar was laying out big creatures, all while I was reaping the benefits off of Rocco triggers, making my board huge with food tokens and +1/+1 counters. Quick side note, that Rocco is super spicy. I really, really love that
Rocco
commander.
Is so cool.
Is he having a modern life?
Oh. Eventually, Gearson gets taken out by the Animar player swinging a big creature. We are on what will be the last round of the game. I am at 1 life, Aragorn is at 24, and Animar is at 30. I play out a 30-30 banquet guests, and I have 4 mana open, and I pass.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The Aragorn player makes a deal to attack the Animar player to get a second artifact from a professional facebreaker since they can't swing through my 30-30 banquet guests.
Yeah, that's a tough attack to make.
Yeah, that's a big blocker. That's a big banquet guest.
How am I going to get through this 30-30 banquet guest right now?
They plan to use a Gearpore Aether Grid that they had stolen from me earlier to burn for 1 damage. I plan to hold on by the skin of my teeth by casting a soul partition on the Aether Grid while the Facebreaker trigger is on the stack. Okay, so he needs the additional treasure from the Facebreaker to activate the Gearpore Aether Grid to ping, so this is the moment to interact. I have 2 mana up, and we are moving to the Animar turn. They full swing at the Aragorn player with lethal damage and a Dracuseth trigger on the stack. The Aragorn player is targeted with 4 damage, and I am targeted with 3. Trigger on the stack, I crack a food to gain 3 life. So I live. Or so I thought. And suddenly I am told, oh, in that case, they will use the other 3 damage that can target me and shoot me for 6. I am sitting there all kinds of salty since targets were declared, triggers were on the stack, and I had threaded the needle. I even had lethal on board if I could just make it to my turn. I just try to let it go because arguing with a teenager at the game store over stack interactions and when legal targets have to be declared is not how I want to spend my Friday night after work. I try to have a few more games, but it ends up leaving a salty taste in my mouth. In a later game, I counter a Defense of the Heart and an extra turn spell of the Animar players, making them salt off. Oversalted and overtired, I end up calling it after that game. The worst part is when I looked up Dracuseth later that night on the way home, you aren't even able to choose the same target multiple times.
Yeah.
I hope that you gentlemen enjoyed my salt shaker overflowing and making others overflow. Saltily yours, Bennett. Damn, dude. Okay, let's read Dracuseth. Yeah, there's a lot going on here.
There's a lot.
But I think Dracuseth is like the thing we got to read. Yeah. So Dracuseth Maw of Flames costs 4 and 3 red, legendary creature dragon. It has flying and says whenever Dracuseth Maw of Flames attacks, it deals 4 damage to any target and 3 damage to each of up to 2 other targets. And it's a 7/7.
So yeah, so you can target 3 things, but they can't be the same thing.
Yeah, you can't deal 10 damage to one thing. You have to do 4 to 1 thing, 3 to 1 thing, and 3 to another thing.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. That's a tough one, because if you don't catch that in the moment, I don't know. There's so much wrong here.
Yeah, that part, sure. But the other part is like changing
targets after targets.
That's a different thing. And that sucks. I get the point of like, I don't want to argue with a teenager on my Friday after work. I think that plays a huge role in here.
Yes.
But there is a point of like, is there a way to approach it that isn't arguing? Depending on this other player's attitude, you can say like, I waited to interact until the targets were declared for a reason. We can't rewind that one.
Yeah.
It also helps to like truly wait to make sure that they're done declaring targets too. Like if someone is still wishy-washy, then like maybe you do need to wait. But like if it's truly clear and done and the targets are declared and you play a thing, you have to be clear. Hey, I'm not cool with us walking this back. The targets were declared already. And often if someone who's trying to take something back is like pushed back on even a little bit. Like I know sometimes I'll like just fuss around with something, but if anyone is like, no, we can't take that back, I'm like, okay, fair enough. Yeah, we'll stick with that.
Yeah.
Definitely attitude dependent on the other players in the pod, but it is something you can say like, hey, I explicitly chose this time to do this because your triggers were declared already. Focus it on the game. You know, it's not like you can't take things back. This impacts the game heavily and was done for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's hard to read, right? We don't know the rest of the context of like how the playgroup dynamics were, but it's like definitely an opportunity, you know, assuming everybody is kind of behaving neutrally and not being otherwise shitty, just to be like, hey, pause here. Let's talk about this for a second, because you've already declared targets. I've already declared my response based on those targets. This completely changes the game state based off of new information that you did not have, right? Like that's generally been our rule around takebacks, is like, if you know new information, that negates the ability to do a takeback.
Agreed.
And obviously every group is going to have different dynamics around takebacks, especially like in a unfamiliar LGS situation that becomes even more difficult because everybody's coming with their own expectations on what they've traditionally done as far as takebacks. But man, that's such a bridge too far to be like, oh, in that case, you actually die this way instead of the other way. And you would have it completely changes the outcome of the game. It changes, you know, all of that stuff. Props to the op for, you know, just kind of eating it, you know, taking the high road to some extent. But also I think there's just a lost lesson for this player of like, you know, they're going to go make other mistakes elsewhere too, and not really, you know, kind of find the actual path to play more accurately and correctly. But
yeah, and again, to the point of like, it is the Friday after work, like you don't necessarily have to take that obligation to help have this teaching moment for someone every time. Like that isn't your obligation in a random environment or a game store environment. Definitely with a pod, it's maybe more important, but like it is okay to just do this. It's a shame then though that the follow-on games are also not a positive experience. It really is a bummer.
There's a way to approach this without even dragging it into a long conversation or a bigger argument or something. You can just be like, hey, your targets were already declared. You can't change them. Like even something that quick, you don't need to be like, let's take a step back here. You already had your things. This is why I did this. You could just be like, targets were picked. You know, you can't change them now.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you're in those moments and you're feeling the salt, it can be hard to have that level head to make that choice and to have that conversation and make it quick and just keep it real snappy. But there, I think there is a very casual way to just be like, ah, sorry, you can't change your targets. They're already declared on the stack.
Yeah.
You know, there's no more discussion. Because I think there's also a world where if you were like, well, the only reason I cracked the food token is because it was going to keep me alive. And now that you're changing things, you know, that's changing the information. That almost opens a door for them to be like, okay, well, in that case, I would have put the 6 damage on you. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like you're starting to get into like walk back territory. So I think when this stuff happens, you just keep it very factual to the rules, keep it super quick and friendly. Just be like, oh, sorry, you actually can't change your targets. It's already on the stack.
Yeah.
And that's
I
it.
think the tough part is when you've been having a game that has some casual take backsies like throughout it, and then someone goes for a take back at a point where suddenly it matters. Like it's really confusing sometimes. Like, oh, someone played a thing, didn't like what they played, took it back, played a different thing, because like Nick was saying, like you can kind of do that sometimes without it impacting the game. Maybe it doesn't target anything or do anything. It just puts a permanent into play for you. Like that might not matter, and you can take that back without it impacting the game. But if it's these critical points, it starts to matter a lot. And so it's weird in a game sometimes where it can feel like it's like, well, you were okay with it then, but you're not okay with it now. So that's where like it helps to have that shared understanding of when that take back is going to be okay.
It opens up all the like what about questions that you mentioned. Like it's like, oh, well, what about that one? How come he got to do it versus, you know, they didn't, right? Like
I think when it comes to that stuff, it's like new information. If any new information has come up, like you were saying, Nick, you can't do a take back, and then life or death. Like if it's like a win lose and someone's like, oh, well, I would have actually done this and that would have made me win or would have made you lose the game. It's like, well, you can't. Like the,
You
it's too
didn't.
critical. This
Right. Yeah,
is
you didn't.
the, these are not moments where I'm allowing take backs. If the take back knocks me out of the game, I'm not gonna fucking give it to you, you know? Like that's just not how it is.
I will say though, to your point about, I generally agree with the keeping it brief and to the rules, but depending again on the dynamics of the group, that could be perceived as being, you know, potentially aggressive or hostile too, to be like, nope, can't do that, right? Like that can open up a whole bunch of extra salt down the vein, depending on the other people's reaction to it. So, you know, again, it varies heavily based off the play group. And if it's been otherwise a friendly pod up until that point, maybe that's fine. But like, I could definitely see that backfiring in some extent and people just kind of doubling down on their positions, even if they're incorrect.
Something that I'll often say in this situation is, what the fuck did you fucking say to me, you little bitch? I'll have you know I graduated top of my class in the Navy SEALs, and I've been involved in numerous secret raids and Al-Qaeda and have over 300 confirmed kills.
Love that thing.
I was not ready for that to happen this game.
I like lore dumped about that to Mika one day in the car. I was like, do you know about this thing? I need you to know about this thing. Let me tell you way too much
Oh, God.
information about it.
Oh man. That's some fucking good pasta, man. That's some good copy pasta
Speaking
right
of pasta, my salt rating was actually, before you even mentioned that, was going to be the salt you put into the boiling pasta water before you put the pasta in.
So tell us why that is your salt rating, Nick.
Because I mean, I think they internalized a lot of the salt and it boiled over to them having to leave, you know, maybe earlier than they wanted to, just because of the it kind of carried over into the rest of the night. So that was my justification for the boiling pasta water salt.
Yeah, I feel
It's
you
pretty
there.
good.
Earlier today, I had some McDonald's because I just fucking wanted it. And the fries were super, super salty. And they were so salty that, like, when I was picking up the burger, it was imparting French fry salt onto the burger. And that's kind of like this situation. Like, you had one really salty game, and then the remnants of that salt impacted the rest of the night. And, you know, that just happens sometimes. It's to me, I think that that is very hard to get out of, especially if you're like alone in an LGS. If I'm at an LGS with friends, I can step aside and be like, yo, Mike, Nick, this fucking bullshit just happened. And you guys can and kind of commiserate, and you guys can be like, yeah, that's fucking shitty, dude. Did you tell him that you graduated top of your class? I'll be like, yeah, I said the whole thing. And he didn't even take it back.
I think like it's a good time after a game like that to take a moment, maybe like grab a Dr. Pepper from your game store's like snack counter or whatever. Like take a step away from a table, maybe just stand up, like physically moving around, help you shake it off in a game store too a little bit.
And even sometimes just saying that you're salty, like I will do this. I will try to say that I'm salty because sometimes, like, if you keep all the salt inside, it brines you even more. But if you just let it out a little bit and you're like, this is kind of making me a little salty, then you can kind of have like a laugh about it and like chill a little bit, you know? But sometimes if you're trying to like not seem salty and you really are salty, that almost makes it worse. You're like a little pressure cooker. You know,
Yeah.
And you just get like,
you crystallize.
You crystallize, dude. You hit your fucking saturation point.
Well, I think that opens up another thing too, right? Which is, you know, you can eat it for the game just because you don't want to have it taint the game, but then you know, have the post game follow up and be like, hey, that was fine once to do that kind of take back, but let's not do that again.
Yeah.
For X, Y, and Z reasons that we've already stated. Yeah.
Or sometimes also when a card feels really busted, like Dracoseth, and you're getting hit by a bunch of it, look it up after the game and be like, wow, I can't believe that card is so busted. And then you get to be like, oh, it's because it isn't.
Yeah.
Just do that card look up before you get in your car to go home.
Yeah. Those are some of my favorite moments where it's like, wow, that seems so broken. And then you reread it and you're like, oh, it's because it's not broken. Yeah. I misread it.
I just had that with some spoiler. It happens to me all the time during spoiler season.
It does. You'll be like, this is an auto include in Magda. And I'm like, yeah, you want one tapped treasure every two turns?
On your next upkeep? It's like, oh, shit. No, I wanted it right now.
Or you can just be like Sam and just play banned cards in your deck. And
yeah.
Wow, that's a really powerful card. I'm surprised you can play that.
Tinker is surprisingly good.
Tinker is surprisingly
weird.
Good.
None of the lists were on it.
Yeah. And it's so cheap. It's actually not that cheap, but
yeah.
Well, that was a good one.
How about one more?
Let's do it. We got one more here, and this is a Reddit post from the EDH subreddit, our old hometown. And this one comes to us from our buddy Magna481. And if you see Magna around the subreddits, give them an upvote, because you know the drill. You got to spread that goodwill. And this post is titled, Am I the Bad Guy? And the story goes, I have a consistent pot of friends with a rotating fourth and fifth person. Both the first two have complained multiple times about me targeting their stuff. Friend one says, I just want to do my thing. I don't care if I win. An example of this would be the other day where they put a Raise the Palisade under an attraction with Myra. I'm not going to fucking read any attractions, man. You could hold me at gunpoint. I'm not going to
read
attractions.
Okay, I'll read them then.
No, we don't need to. I don't even think we need to.
We do. It's fine. I think we got to get over this.
I don't think we need to. I don't think we
need to. What was the attraction called? Myra?
Myra is a commander.
Is that the one that puts things under an attraction?
Let's just keep going. Let's see if we need to even read anything.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand, open an attraction.
Oh my gosh.
I'm ruining Sam's failure to acknowledge.
This is a legal card.
It is a legal card. You can tell because it has a very tiny little silver
oval.
You
need to know
it.
How this works,
There's
Sam.
No acorn.
It's a
legal card.
Can we have a rant about how that was so dumb? The whole like
that was handled poorly. Yeah.
Versus oval is the way to distinguish legal cards and stupid Unfinity.
I think we did have a rant about that.
I think we did.
Awful.
It was in our episode that had Community Salt in the title. We were also talked about the Magic 30 cards. And,
holy
and,
shit. How do you know this?
Well, I edit the podcast.
It's just wild to remember from that's like a year ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember because I agonized over the title. Well, let's keep going. So an example of this would be they put a Raise the Palisade under an attraction with Myra. We all play typically lower power level decks, about 4 to 7. I didn't have artifact removal, so I ended up giving all my creatures I played haste and swinging nonstop at him after he bounced all of our creatures to hand 2 turns in a row. About turn 5 or 6, this happened. He got really mad at me and said, I can see that this is unfun, so I won't do it every turn. My mindset was that it wasn't fun to have to worry about getting Cyclonic Rifted basically at his whim. Another example is he plays Marisi and will goad everyone every single turn, which forces us to either take huge amounts of damage or to trade our creatures. That's fine, but when I remove his commander, he gets upset that I'm not letting him do what he built his deck to do. My other friend isn't so extreme, but has gotten extremely salty when I've removed what I deem to be threats. Two I can recall are a flyer with a Celestial Mantle on it, while we had no other flyers, and another was an Academy Manufacturer in his Morska deck. I usually kill what I deem threats, but is my threat assessment off? Should I be laying off? I feel it's usually better in random pods.
You don't get a free pass to do the thing in Commander. That's not what it's about. It's the pursuit of happiness, not happiness, that you're allowed to, you know? Like, you're supposed to be allowed to do some of the setup stuff, maybe the ramp, like it's kind of rude to interact with lands, blowing up someone's rocks maybe hurts, but like, you're not going to get stopped there. But once you start going, once you start doing the thing, like, people need to be able to interact with you. That's what leads to like the mid and the late game where you have these more interesting pieces and it's not just like the solitaire setup of stuff. So they got to get over it. And getting a single thing spot removed here and there when it's a threat, like you just got to do a better job of educating those players why you were so scared of that thing and needed to remove it, you know? Like just communicate that. Because maybe they'll be like, sure, it had flying, but there's a 2020 coming out over there or something. Like maybe they have real reasons that they feel bad for being the threat. But sometimes people are just going to complain when they're getting targeted, and that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I will yes and that by adding the fact that like those conditions, right? It's not even just that they're like building their own board state or doing their own thing in isolation. Like the things they're doing are explicitly detrimental to the player that's stopping them. Exactly. It's like, oh, why won't you let me bounce your board every turn? I'm just doing my thing over here. Yeah. Like, why won't you let me goad you into attacking every player? I'm just doing my thing. It's like, no, it's not really the same thing. Like it'd be one thing if you were like building a pillow fort or something and kind of getting attacked for, you know, unprovoked reasons. But this is
you're
like,
just trying to assemble attractions.
Right. It's like, no, I'm like specifically, you know, dealing stuff to my board that is preventing me from doing my thing, but I can't stop you from doing your thing. I don't know about that, bud. I don't know about that.
To some extent, you are allowed to do the thing that you want to do. But if the thing that you want to do is fuck with other players, then like they're going to stop you.
Right.
You can't fool yourself into thinking that they won't try to stop that interaction.
Right.
You know, I think it's really funny that they had this ability to bounce a shit ton of creatures every single turn. And they were like, OK, well, I see that this is unfun. I just won't do it every turn. It's like, that doesn't really help.
Right. Now you're just playing with your food.
Yeah. And now you just have a loaded gun on the table and you're just going to shoot us when, you know, you decide that that you've waited long enough between when you fired the last bullet. Like, I'm still getting shot. You're just doing it slower. Like, it's not a fair trade, man. And as someone who used to play Morisi, Morisi's going to get fucking removed. Like, if you play a Morisi deck and you goad everybody, the way for them to stop that is to remove your shit. And like, I would play that list and drop Morisi and he'd get removed. And in the early days, I would get salty. And in the later days, I'd be like, yes, this makes sense. I need to have protection if I'm going to play Morisi.
And once the Morisi train gets going, you actually do need to remove Morisi twice. Because like if Morisi hits you and your stuff is all goaded and you attack, your stuff is tapped out. So you need to remove Morisi for the next combat so that you don't get re-tapped out on everything. And then it's still got another round where you're going to have to remove the Morisi again before you get actually stopped.
Plus the whole clause of not being able to do it during combat too.
Oh, really, man.
That one bit us so many times.
I do love that. Yeah. Everyone always forgot about that shit. Oh. It's the fucking best. That was a good deck. But a very salty one. And I think just anything that takes agency away from your opponents is gonna tilt them and make them want to deal with that piece that is doing that on the board.
Right. And therefore you should not be surprised that that is how they feel they're going to react to that. Right.
Yeah, like, I don't... exactly.
So to the op, no, you are not the baddie. I think you are perfectly reasonable in your game actions of trying to stop the thing that's blowing up your own board or goading you repeatedly.
Yeah. You're doing great.
You are allowed to seek the win.
Yes.
By whatever means necessary.
Yeah. And like your friends should be allowed to play whatever deck they want to play. But if you're going to play a commander like Morisi or have some crazy interaction like this Raise the Palisade attraction kind of thing, you need to know that removal is going to come your way. You know, like powerful board states and powerful effects in the game get interacted with. That's just like how it is. You have three opponents that have a vested interest to remove your powerful shit at all times. So come into every EDH game with that in mind. And, you know, you can still get salty. Like, you still will get salty. But you can't be like, why did you even remove that?
Right.
Like, you can't ask those questions. You know why they fucking removed Morisi. Because you were goading them every single turn. Like, you don't see that connection? Ugh. Makes me mad, man. That makes me salty.
Yeah, there's some spillover salt on this one, I think.
Oh, yeah. I'm catching some grains, dude. My crust is... I got a dump thick truck crust going. What did we say earlier?
Dummy thick
crust.
Dump truck crust. I do finally understand what was going on with this attraction situation, if you want me to explain.
I do, yeah.
So Myra, you open an attraction when you play an instant source. Just imagine it's just an artifact that exists. Okay. Yes. You open an attraction whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, and then you can tap Myra and basically tuck an instant or sorcery from your graveyard under an attraction. And then whenever you do the attraction mechanic, which is visit the attraction, you get to cast that spell for free. So the spell they were casting for free is Raise the Palisade. It says choose a creature type, return all creatures that aren't of the chosen type to their owner's hand.
Ugh.
And Myra has the performer creature type.
Oh,
so you can hit like truly everything except your commander, basically.
Wow, that's really awful. Yeah, fuck this stupid deck, dude. I'd be complaining so much about this. Like, give me a break, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. People love Cyclonic Rift in the first place, and people really love it when you do it to them every fucking turn.
Every turn. That's really good for people.
Yeah. I don't know what they're expecting
off of that, but.
When you do that, it's short games and happy opponents, usually.
Usually how that goes.
Oh, man. Say the line, Bart.
So what's the salt rating, eh?
I think it's pretty fucking high here, man. I think there's like this cognitive dissonance thing that happens with people when they're playing salty decks and they don't understand why their opponents are salty. Again, you can play a salty deck. Make it known in your pregame conversation so people know what they're signing up for. But you can play as many salty decks as you want, as long as people know what they're getting into, and as long as you don't become a salty bitch when they remove your horrible stacks pieces, your consistent removal, your like very oppressive commanders. Like you gotta buckle in and be ready for that.
Yeah,
it just drives me nuts, man. It's like a weird like main character thing. They're like, but me? So why would you interact with me?
I'm reminded of the Bobby Newport campaign from Parks and Rec. Just let me win. Why won't you let me have it? Just let me win. Give it to me. Oh man,
I think about that weekly. That Bobby Newport scene. I think about it.
Bobby
very
Newport.
Often. Oh god, that one was fucking salty, dude.
Yeah, that's high. That's way up there.
Well, is it that time?
What time?
That time of the week?
Ooh, the time of the week that comes every week?
Yeah, I think that one, right? That's the one.
It's the time of the week where we say, Mike. What's the... I like that.
I like that one.
What's the salty card of the week?
The salty card of the week this week is...
Should have known by the pregame conversation that something was missing. You should have known when I said it's about a 7, but you didn't listen. Your pre-con flopped, but I never stopped. Instead, you said salty as fuck as I shot up my combo. And though I know all about power levels, still I won't be honest. 'Cause my win rate matters way more than your enjoyment of this. And I didn't mean any word I said when I said there's no combos. I meant that my deck wins with combos. And I'm gonna keep on stomping noobs, 'cause it's the only thing I wanna do. Keep on stopping news.
very good. That was definitely really good.
And that is Keep On Loving You, or Just Keep On Loving, by REO Speedwagon, requested by our patron Clearbrook. Thank you, Clearbrook. I hope you appreciate that.
Thanks, Clearbrook.
That was good.
When I came up with that line, I was like singing this in the shower, trying to like come up with lyrics. And when I said there's no combos, I meant that my deck wins with combos. I was like, that's pretty fucking funny, man. This is a good. And then I wrote the whole thing about that. I was like,
that's great.
How do I like backtrack to make a song
that can get here? Yeah. That's great. Well, thanks, Sam. That was a lovely salty song of the week.
Thanks, Mike.
The salty card of the week this week is Doubling Season.
Ooh. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. It's 4 and a green for an enchantment. If an effect would create 1 or more tokens under your control, it creates twice that many of those tokens instead. If an effect would put 1 or more counters on a permanent you control, it puts twice that many of those counters on that permanent instead. And it's got a lot of printings. I know you wanted to know about that.
It does.
A lot, Nick? But not enough.
Yeah, it always gets reprinted, but somehow never enough.
It's always very expensive, yeah.
Nick, how do you feel about this one?
I don't know. I was trying to think about it. Like, it doesn't particularly make me salty, but it's also just become such a, like, meme. Like, any deck that has tokens or +1/+1 counters wants a doubling season.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, like, not irksome, but it's just kind of boring. It just becomes like such an uninteresting card, and just like the de facto deck becomes 99 cards instead of 100, because this is just needs to be in there if you're running it at any given power level.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know. It, like I said, it doesn't make me salty. I can see why it's on the list. And I think it mostly just makes me like, oh, it's kind of an uninteresting card. And especially like, and not to go on too far of a tangent, but WotC has this penchant lately of just putting double the thing on whatever card or commander they feel like at this point. And I think just that's kind of a lame gameplay design. And Doubling Season is kind of one of the first ones to do that.
Yeah, it's sort of like the OG on it little bit. Sam, how do you feel about this one?
I feel pretty similar to Nick. Like, this card doesn't make me that inherently salty. I do think that it's a bit, not like boring, but I think it's in this weird realm where it does a really awesome thing. And when you have it on your board, it is incredibly powerful, but it's almost feeling like auto include-y these days. You know, it actually is interesting that WotC has been printing a lot of these effects, because I'm glad that there are effects that only double tokens or only double +1/+1 counters, because before those effects were printed, it was really just Doubling Season and you would just be jamming it into any deck. And now you can get like a little bit more niche with what you include if you do want that doubling effect.
Right.
I only have like 1, maybe 2 copies of Doubling Season, and I don't put it in every deck. I have it in like my Gave deck, and that's it. It's like a very specific choice for that deck. I think it gets boring or salty if you're seeing it all the time and you're playing into it all the time. And if like you have a friend who has multiple token decks or multiple +1/+1 counter decks, and it just appears in every single deck, it's like, okay, well, this is a bit obnoxious now, just because it feels very win more in some instances, even though in other instances it does support combos and is more of like an actual win con in its own right. But I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm on this one. Doesn't really make me salty. It's obviously very powerful, but kind of maybe just a couple grains of salt from me. How about you, Mike? What do you think about this one?
I think my biggest salt from this is, for a really long time, this was like an example of cards that were just out of the budget I was willing to spend on a card. Honestly, still, like, if I see a $40 card, and if I'm just building something for fun, if I'm throwing together like a brew, that's just prohibitive. Like, I'm not going to buy that as a single to put in a deck that I'm building. And I think that is also a part of the salt of it for me, of like, like you guys are saying, a lot of decks you're going to build, if it's a token theme, or if, particularly if it's a counters and a tokens theme deck, you're going to want to put this in because it's going to work with both of the kind of two main like axes of the deck. But it's just too outside of what feels reasonable. And once you start including cards that are like $40 or so, like if you're going to put multiple of those in, your budget gets blown out in a way where like you start to be okay with running a lot of staple-y things.
Yeah.
Because like if you're going to run Doubling Season, well, Rhystic Study is cheaper than Doubling Season. So you should put it in the deck if it also has blue, you know, and it starts getting into that situation where this isn't fitting in any budget deck. It's really only fitting in some of the highest power stuff. But then it's also not really relevant in CDH. So it kind of peaks in this like high power, kind of like trash tier, we've been calling it Magic, I think.
This is one of those cards that I'm kind of glad it's a little bit expensive, because I don't want to see it in every single game. and I don't want people to put it in every single deck that can run it. Because I think some
this
people
is a dookie take.
Hot take.
I think this is a dookie take personally.
Well, that's fine.
I get where you're coming from, but I think some
people, when they have like when it's budgetless, they become unfettered and they just dump Rhystic Study and Doubling Season into every single deck that they have.
I think that's a deck building issue though, that like some people can't contain themselves and find the better cards and stuff. So I don't think that's like a we should price people out of some cards kind of angle. But
only rich people should be allowed to play this game.
Yeah, Magic is a game for the 1%. Come
on. If the poorers want to double.
That's what you meant. I could tell that's what you meant,
too. I'm glad you jumped on me so hard.
Post Malone needs to be, you know, only the only one who can play Doubling Season.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the
Magic
only reasonable
thing. Actually.
And I say that as someone who was given a Doubling Season. I inherited it. It was generational wealth,
but you're a self-made Doubling Season, though, right? You were given the doubling, but you made the season. So
there's definitely some emeralds on that Doubling Season.
Yeah, it's a green card.
I found it in my emerald mine. No, okay, I know what you're saying. I guess all I'm saying is like I'm glad I don't see it in every deck, and maybe the price is an element of that.
Yeah, that's
fair. Like, I'm glad that this card is in a space where I'm not seeing it in every deck, regardless of why that reason is.
Yeah.
And I think that with some of these cards that are very powerful, auto includes, like Rhystic Study, like Doubling Season, other things out there too, I'm glad that you can't just throw it into every single deck you own, because it is kind of boring. Like, it's a cool, powerful effect, but it does have like this element of like, oh, cool, Doubling Season. I've seen a million of those. You're going to double everything. Wow.
Yeah.
So, Mike, where does this fall on the top 300 salty card list?
Great question. The time has come for your guesses to be written down.
Sorry, I'm getting my paper ready to write down my number.
Oh, yeah, I will too.
Listener, also prepare your note. Get your phone out or...
Your abacus.
Your abacus, yeah. Take a picture of your abacus and put it in the 5-star review that you want to leave for this episode.
You can get out your fingers and toes. And then if you get like your roommate, your partner.
Trying to solicit toe picks right now?
Oh, man.
No. I'm saying you can count on your fingers.
Come on, Sam. Come on.
The Howling Salt Mine at gmail.com.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
And what do you guys got?
110.
Mine's 234.
Sam takes it.
Wow.
It is 198.
Ooh. All right. I was pretty close.
You were? I don't think that's a huge surprise, you know? Definitely not in the top 100. Kind of salty.
Yeah. I mean, it's not saltier than Winota.
It is. Not. It is not saltier than Winota. Yes, that is what I said. Yes, correct.
Nice, good save.
Yes,
it
correct.
Is not.
It is not.
It isn't.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I think it's one of those things that like everybody acknowledges how powerful it is, but also most people own a Doubling Season or have somebody in their pod that they play against it. It's something that you can't let it live on board because it's powerful, but I don't think it's directly making anybody salty. On its own, it does literally nothing. It needs other shit to make it do stuff.
Yep, wraps it up for the salty card of the week.
Well, thanks, Mike. That was a lovely salty card. And thank you to all of our prospectors out there. You know, we got to thank our Salt Packet Plus tier members. Give them a special little thank you. And this week we have Thoughtimus Prime, Rothbox, Bobo Fett, Brandon Mousecop, Chameleon, Captain Kroz, Clearbrook, D. Beeson, Gilgamesh, Doug's Dad, Bark Bark, Firehawk Ash, Ebes, Pez, and Vok. Thank you all for supporting us. We really do appreciate it. And thank you to all the other prospectors out there for tuning in every single week to Howling Salt Mine, hanging out with us, chatting about salty stories, being a fly on the wall in the room with us. If you want more Howling Salt Mine in your life, you should check out our Patreon. It's a really good time. Patreon.com/Howling Salt Mine. We have a thriving Discord community. We have bonus content that's coming out. We just launched a kind of new occasional-ish bonus show that we're doing, which is called Off the Rails, where we just rant and ramble and gush about shit that we love that is not Magic the Gathering related. Our first episode had me and Tony, and we talked about Dragon Ball Z for an hour. So if that is something that is interesting to you, you should check it out. It's a really good time. Another way that you can support the show is to send us your salty stories. You can send them to us at our Gmail that I mentioned a couple times in the show, thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com, or you can submit them on our lovely website, which is thehowlingsaltmine.com or howlingsaltmine.com. We'll also get you there. Another way that you can support the show is to check out our merchandise, specifically our playmats over at Jank Mats. Those guys produce an excellent product. If you want a playmat with the Howling Saltmine logo on it, that is where you're going to find it. We also have our bonfire store with all of our shirt designs. So go check that stuff out. Pick yourself up some merch. Treat yourself. You know, you've been good. Give yourself a little treat. Another way that you can help us out is to give us a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app of choice. We've mentioned it before. Google Podcasts is gone. It is dead. Please give us something on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Those bigger podcast things are going to help us stick out in the algorithm, help new people find the show. Lastly, you know we got to shout them out. Our awesome friend Devin Burnett. If you're ever in Asheville, North Carolina, hit him up and get a tattoo from him. He drew our podcast art, so you know he's talented. And he's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
10,000 subscribers are boost.
Oh, Tony. Is Tony in the room with us?
I hope not.
Well, thanks, everybody. And as always, stay salty. And don't forget to draw an additional card during your draw step.
It's the Howling Saltmine. The Howling Saltmine.
Find the saltiest stories.
Oh.
Fuck. Don't draw attention to it.
Off the rip. Nice.
Hey, Sam, you need to shout out the Patreons.
Oh, fuck.
Nice.
Shit.
Nice.
Well, before we go any further.
Busted.
Let me bring it up.
If you can. I love the Zoom. Thumbs up.
Does mine not do that?
I think that's a Mac thing. I don't think it's a Zoom thing.
I think it's Mac. Like I think it's Zoom. I mean, it doesn't happen on. It's probably just on by default for Macs or something.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry. Maybe I should fuck around with the settings for a while and figure that out, because that's fun, isn't it?
Well, don't do it now.
It's hard. No, I'm doing it right now. It's important. No, it's not. It's not important to do this. Ooh, I can add some lip color.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Ooh,
stupid sexy Mike.
Wow. Damn. Got me all bricked up.
Oh my god. Oh boy.
Doug's dag. Another way that you can help us out is to give yourself a 5-star review. Not yourself. Don't give yourself a 5-star review.
Give yourself a 5-star review.
That will help us out.
Love yourself, everybody. Yeah, if you can't love yourself, you're supposed to love somebody else. Yeah.
Love yourself first, then love the podcast.